page 93. Chapter 13. The Chorus Line. The Wily Sea Captain, a Sea Shanty. As performed by the 12 maids in sailor costumes. O wily Odysseus, he set out from Troy, with his boat full of loot and his heart full of joy, for he was Athene's own shiny-eyed boy, with his lies and his tricks and his thieving. His first port of call was the sweet Lotus shore, where we sailors did long to forget the foul war, but we soon were hauled off on the black ships once more, although we were pining and grieving. Page 94. To the dread one-eyed Cyclops, then next we did hie. He wanted to eat us, so we put out his eye. Our lad said, "I'm no one," but then bragged, "'Twas I, Odysseus, the prince of deceiving." So there's a course on his head from Poseidon, his foe, that is dogging his heels as he sails to and fro, and a big bag of wind that will boisterously blow Odysseus, the saltiest seaman. Here's a health to our captain, so gallant and free, whether stuck on a rock or asleep beneath a tree, or rolled up in the arms of some nymph of the sea, which is where we would all like to be, man. Page 95. The vile Laestrygonians, then we did meet, who dined on our men from their brains to their feet. He was sorry he'd asked them for something to eat, Odysseus, that epical he-man. On the Isle of Circe, we were turned into swine, till Odysseus bedded the goddess so fine that he ate up her cakes and he drank up her wine. For a year became her blithe lodger. So a health to our captain where he may roam, tossed here and tossed there on the wide ocean's foam, and he's in no hurry to ever get home, Odysseus, that crafty old codger. Page 96. To the Isle of the Dead, then he next took his way, filled a trench up with blood, held the spirits at bay, till he learned that Tiresias, the seer, had to say, Odysseus, the artfulest dodger. The sirens' sweet singing then next he did brave. They attempted to lure him to a feathery grave. While tied to the mast he did rant and did rave, but Odysseus alone learned their riddle. The whirlpool, Charybdis, did not our land catch, nor snake-eyed Scylla, she could not him snatch. Page 97. Then he ran the fell rocks that would grind you to scratch, for their clashing he gave not a piddle. We men did a bad turn against his command. When we ate the sun's cattle, they sure tasted grand. In a storm we all perished, but our captain reached land on the isle of the goddess Calypso. After 7 long years there of kissing and woo, he escaped on a raft that was drove to and fro, till fair Nausicaa's maids that the laundry did do found him bare on the beach. He did drip so. Page 98. Then he told his adventures and laid to his store 100 disasters and sufferings galore, for no one can tell what the fates have in store, not Odysseus, that master disguiser. So a health to our captain, where'er he may be, whether walking the earth or adrift on the sea, for he's not down in Hades, unlike all of we, and we leave you not any the wiser. Page 99. Chapter 14. The Suitors Stuff Their Faces. I was wandering in the fields the other day, if it was a day, nibbling on some asphodel, when I ran into Antinous. He usually struts about in his finest cloak and his best robe, gold brooches and all, looking belligerent and haughty, and shouldering aside the other spirits. But as soon as he sees me, he assumes the guise of his own corpse, with blood spurting all down his front and an arrow through his neck. He was the first of the suitors that Odysseus shot. This performance of his with the arrow is meant as a reproach, or so he intends it, but it doesn't cut any ice with me. The man was a pest when he was alive, and a pest he remains. "Greetings, Antinous," I said to him. "I wish you'd take that arrow out of your neck. It is the arrow of my love, Penelope, of the divine form, fairest and most sagacious of all women," he replied. Page 100. Although it came from the renowned bow of Odysseus, in reality the cruel archer was Cupid himself. "I wear it in remembrance of the great passion I bore for you and carried to my grave." He goes on in this spurious way quite a lot, having had a good deal of practice at it while he was alive. "Come now, Antinous," I said. "We're dead now. You don't have to blather on in this fatuous manner, down here. You have nothing to gain by it. There's no need for your trademark hypocrisy. So be a good fellow for once and eject the arrow. It does nothing to improve your appearance." He gazed at me lugubriously, with eyes like a whipped spaniel's. "Merciless in life, merciless in death," he sighed. But the arrow vanished and the blood disappeared, and his greenish-white complexion returned to normal. "Thank you," I said. "That's better. Now we can be friends. And as a friend, you can tell me, why did you suitors risk your lives by acting in such an outrageous way towards me and towards Odysseus, not once, but for years and years?" Page 101. "It's not that you weren't warned. Prophets foretold your doom, and Zeus himself sent bird portents and significant thunderings." Antinous sighed. "The gods wanted to destroy us," he said. "That's everyone's excuse for behaving badly," I said. "Tell me the truth. It was hardly my divine beauty. I was 35 years old by the end of it, worn out with care and weeping, and as we both know, I was getting fat around the middle. You suitors weren't born when Odysseus set out for Troy, or else you were mere babies like my son, Telemachus, or you were children at the very most, so for all practical purposes, I was old enough to be your mother. You babbled on about how I made your knees melt and how you longed to have me share your bed and bear your children, yet you knew perfectly well that I was all but past childbearing age. You could probably have still squeezed out one or two little brats," Antinous replied nastily. He could barely suppress a smirk. Page 102. "That's more like it," I said. "I prefer straightforward answers. So what was your real motive?" "We wanted the treasure trove, naturally," he said, "not to mention the kingdom." This time he had the impudence to laugh outright. "What young man wouldn't want to marry a rich and famous widow? Widows are supposed to be consumed with lust, especially if their husbands have been missing or dead for such a long time as yours was. You weren't exactly a Helen, but we could have dealt with that. The darkness conceals much. All the better that you were 20 years older than us. You'd die first, perhaps with a little help, and then, furnished with your wealth, we could have had our pick of any young and beautiful princess we wanted. You didn't really think we were maddened by love for you, did you? You may not have been much to look at, but you were always intelligent." I'd said I preferred straightforward answers, but of course nobody does, not when the answers are so unflattering. "Thank you for your frankness," I said coldly. "It must be a relief to you to express your real feelings for once." Page 103. "You can put the arrow back now. To tell you the truth, I feel a surge of joy every time I see it sticking through your lying, gluttonous neck." The suitors did not appear on the scene right away. For the first 9 or 10 years of Odysseus's absence, we knew where he was. He was at Troy, and we knew he was still alive. No, they didn't start besieging the palace until hope had dwindled and was flickering out. First 5 came, then 10, then 50. The more there were, the more they were attracted, each fearing to miss out on the perpetual feasting and the marriage lottery. They were like vultures when they spot a dead cow. One drops, then another, until finally every vulture for miles around is tearing up the carcass. They simply showed up every day at the palace and proclaimed themselves my guests, imposing upon me as their host. Then, taking advantage of my weakness and lack of manpower, they helped themselves to our livestock, butchering the animals themselves, roasting the flesh with the help of their servants, and ordering the maids about and pinching their bottoms as if they were in their own homes. Page 104. It was astonishing the amount of food they could cram into themselves. They gorged as if their legs were hollow. Each one ate as if to outdo all the others at eating. Their goal was to wear down my resistance with the threat of impoverishment. So mountains of meat and hillocks of bread and rivers of wine vanished down their throats as if the earth had opened and swallowed everything down. They said they would continue in this manner until I chose one of them as my new husband. So they punctuated their drunken parties and merrymaking with moronic speeches about my ravishing beauty and my excellence and wisdom. I can't pretend that I didn't enjoy a certain amount of this. Everyone does. We all like to hear songs in our praise, even if we don't believe them. But I tried to view their antics as one might view a spectacle or a piece of buffoonery. What new similes might they employ? Which one would pretend most convincingly to swoon with rapture at the sight of me? Page 105. Once in a while, I would make an appearance in the hall where they were feasting, backed by two of my maids, just to watch them outdo themselves. Amphinomus usually won on the grounds of good manners, although he was far from being the most vigorous. I hate to admit that I occasionally daydreamed about which one I would rather go to bed with, if it came to that. Afterwards, the maids would tell me what pleasantries the suitors were exchanging behind my back. They were well positioned to eavesdrop, as they were forced to help serve the meat and drink. What did the suitors have to say about me, about among themselves? Here are a few samples. First prize, a week in Penelope's bed. Second prize, 2 weeks in Penelope's bed. Close your eyes, and they're all the same. Just imagine she's Helen. That'll put bronze in your spear. Ha ha. When's the old bitch going to make up her mind? Let's murder the son. Get him out of the way while he's young. The little bastard's starting to get on my nerves. What's to stop one of us from just grabbing the old cow and making off with her? Page 106. No, lads, that would be cheating. You know our bargain. Whoever gets the prize gives out respectable gifts to the others. We're agreed, right? We're all in this together. Do or die. You do, she dies. Because whoever wins has to fuck her to death. Ha ha. Sometimes I wondered whether the maids were making some of this up, out of high spirits or just to tease me. They seemed to enjoy the reports they brought, especially when I dissolved in tears and prayed to gray-eyed Athene either to bring Odysseus back or put an end to my sufferings. Then they could dissolve in tears as well, and weep and wail, and bring me comforting drinks. It was a relief to their nerves. Eurycleia was especially diligent in the reporting of malicious gossip, whether true or invented. Most probably she was trying to harden my heart against the suitors and their ardent pleas, so I would remain faithful to the very last gasp. She was always Odysseus's biggest fan. Page 107. What could I do to stop these aristocratic young thugs? They were at the age when they were all swagger, so appeals to their generosity, attempts to reason with them, and threats of retribution alike had no effect. Not one would back down for fear the others would jeer at him and call him a coward. Remonstrating with their parents did no good. Their families stood to gain by their behavior. Telemachus was too young to oppose them, and in any case he was only one, and they were 112 or 108 or 120. It was hard to keep track of the number. There were so many. The men who might have been loyal to Odysseus had sailed off with him to Troy, and any of those remaining who might have taken my side were intimidated by the sheer force of numbers and were afraid to speak up. I knew it would do no good to try to expel my unwanted suitors or to bar the palace doors against them. If I tried that, they'd really turn ugly and go on the rampage and snatch by force what they were attempting to win by persuasion. But I was the daughter of Aeneid. I remembered my mother's advice to me. Page 108. Behave like water, I told myself. Don't try to oppose them. When they try to grasp you, slip through their fingers, flow around them. For this reason, I pretended to view their wooing favorably in theory. I even went so far as to encourage one, then another, and to send them secret messages. But I told them before choosing among them, I had to be satisfied in my mind that Odysseus would never return.